Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 68 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve, and we're going to cover this week's nerd news. We're going to start with the entertainment talk and go over one of our new favorite shows, Devs, on FX on Hulu. There's more in the speculation and saga of the upcoming Batman movie. The upcoming James Bond movie has been delayed due to coronavirus fears. And then we've got another video game getting adapted into an HBO series. Then we'll move over to tech news and discuss the recent use of CRISPR-Cas9 in the first human eye. Some talk around new technologies in bioprinting, electric vehicles, and finally some scary stuff from Google tracking all of our movements. All right, let's get to it.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
And welcome back to episode 68 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I guess let's jump into entertainment. And first, I always like to some recent reviews. And you know, we've got your latest review on... Was it Onward?
Onward, yeah. So Disney and Pixar's latest movie, Onward, it was great. Check out the review. No spoilers, as usual. Just kind of gives you a good feel for the movie, a little anecdotal kind of experience at the end. But the animation was great. Voice acting was phenomenal. You know, Chris Pratt and Tom Holland play the main kids, and you know, you could tell with their experience working together on the Avengers films and things like that, that they really took that chemistry back with them in their voice acting. Cute story based in a really kind of like fun fantasy world, tackles a really tough issue, especially when it comes to children, about the loss of a father and the grief that comes with it, and you know, which I really appreciated. You know, for those that don't know, me and Ken both lost our father as we were young men, about what, 16 years ago now, 17 years ago, and
17, yeah.
So to be able to tackle a story like this in a fun but meaningful way, I think is a really good service for society. You know, for those that, you know, listen to the show, one of my best friends just recently passed. He left three children behind. They went and saw this movie this weekend, and it really kind of helped them process, you know, what they've been going through. You know, the oldest is 9, and he looked at the film as a way to see that he's not alone in this situation, that there are others like him that lose a father so young, and that the wanting to see their father again and spend more time with him, that this isn't something that he's going through alone, which was really good for him. You know, as a man that lost his father a long time ago, it was a fun, heartwarming story for me, you know, cause I struggle every day with not being able to call my dad still. And, to have a movie where these kids go on this like fantasy adventure trying to conjure up one last day with their dad was really touching. And they don't keep it like, it's not a depressing film by any means. It's really fun. I commend Pixar for kind of tackling a story focused on grief and reconciliation. Like it's something I think that a lot of kids needed. There's really no films that kind of handle this subject. And now, they have a good outlet. You know, if you're a parent and you don't know how to talk to your kids about the loss of a loved one, this is a phenomenal film to start that dialogue.
Yeah. And then it also falls in, I guess, other than being a good movie, falls in the realm of nerd as they poke fun at basic characters of Dungeons and Dragons. And
yeah, it's based in fantasy type land, stuff. So it's got all kinds of Tolkien references, Dungeons and Dragons references, World of Warcraft, magic. Like it's got a whole bunch of those like little jabs towards fantasy genres. It's just all in all a really fun time with a really heartwarming story. Like I can't say enough good things about this movie. It was phenomenal. I'll probably end up going and seeing it again.
Yeah. Well, go see it. Check out the review on thenerdcantina.com. And let's move into, I guess, the other parts of week news, but we got really another entertainment thing or something that we're interested in. We're watching. You posted your article at the end of last week about the upcoming show Devs, or really not upcoming, it's now the current show Devs. And you went to that panel over at C2E2, and the show's come out. First two episodes are up on Hulu. I think the third episode will probably be up here in a day or two.
Yeah, I think it airs on Wednesdays or Thursdays.
Yeah. So, I mean, the show is interesting. It's definitely really well done.
Well, so at C2E2, I was invited by FX, the FX network, to have a private screening and participate in an interview with the creator, Alex Garland, who also did Ex Machina and Annihilation and had his hands in a few number of other films and video games. That was an amazing experience on its own. And then to see some of the previews and exclusive scenes that they showed at the panel really got my anticipation peaked. And so we wrote a small article just kind of generally on my experience at the panel right before the show debuted, just to get people to kind of interested. But now that the first two episodes are up, the show really kind of speaks for itself. You know, I don't think it needs any much, you know, extra hype, you know, as far as promotion goes. But I mean, so for those that are fans of the show, me and Ken did a Cantina conversation on the existence or lack thereof of free will. I am a determinist. I can admit that. And one of the themes that this show tackles is determinism and free will, which is really brave of Alex Garland. I mean, I really, this, you know, when we talk about it, a lot of it goes, you know, gets lost in the ether and goes over people's heads, and a lot of people can't grasp this subject. So for him to tackle it in a television medium and try to get a mass audience to not only understand it but follow a plot that goes along with it, I think is really brave.
I think it is really brave, and I think it also, you know, I don't know at what point he's going to explain really what they're attempting to do, but the whole concept of the show is it's really based in tech. So yeah, it's about determinism, but it's really based in tech. It's really based in the future of what is quantum computing and what is possible if quantum computing ever becomes the theoretical power and strength that quantum computing can be. And it's the concept of using quantum computing to predict
the future, basically
human behavior, to where essentially if you had a quantum computer that was powerful enough to completely take the history of an organic life form, whether that's a human or not, if you're able to completely take the history of something and then put all the current constraints on it, that the quantum computer can exactly predict what that thing's going to do. And that's what the whole show is based off of. It seems that they're trying to use quantum computing to predict human behavior, to essentially prove that we have no control, that the computer can exactly determine what we're going to.
Well, and if you do believe in determinism, you know, theoretically, this is pretty on point. You know, like if you had a computer that can take in every variable in life's existence and can crunch all those numbers properly, you could predict what I was going to eat for breakfast tomorrow and what, you know, like where I'm going to go and how, you know, what I'm going to say. It's, you know, what I want to know, like I'm curious to see is how they predict, like, you know, a lot of the illusion of free will comes with your brain synapses. Like you just don't know what choices your brain is going to present to you when you're making your quotation free will choices, you know? So like, how does a quantum computer compute your random, you know, brain firings that help you along this track of determinism? That's where I they kind of lose me a little bit. But it's to sit in the panel and listen to Alex Garland talk about this stuff was amazing. He like, I so bad, I just wanted to corner him and just like slap a Nerd Cantina sticker on his forehead and be like, you're one of us, you know, like one of us, one of us. Like he is, you know, he in the panel, he expressed his great love for video games and like how Resident Evil was a big influence in him on making that 28 Days Later. And you know, just how he has fears of, you know, Facebook and the social media and the data collection and things like that, which I think is playing into this show, because you can't have these, you know, a quantum computer can't predict your movements if they don't know about you. So I'm assuming that this company is just sucking up data from all these services and stuff to put into the quantum computer.
And he talks about that even in the Artificial Intelligence podcast, and you see it in the show with the Nick Offerman's character being this ultra rich, super, you know, billionaire business owner who, in his mind, is doing things with an not evil, altruistic mentality, but the impacts on society we'll see. And he kind of likens that in like the Artificial Intelligence podcast. So like what you see with like Facebook and everybody else, like, does he think that these CEOs are evil? No. But are the outcomes that they're doing as they drive forward their technologies and stuff like that have the absolute potential? Yes.
Yeah, he said flat out, he's like, he has no social media presence whatsoever. Like, we cannot tag him in anything that we write or produce because he is not going to see it whatsoever. You know, but I mean, he has great interest in these subjects. And like you said, he was on Lex Fridman's AI podcast. He obviously is talking to the same people that we listen to when we're discussing these things. He was well-versed. When the panel wrapped up, he walked off to the side and he kind of stopped. And there's a lot of fanboys with like Annihilation posters and Ex Machina posters just like surrounding him to get stuff signed. So I looked at it as an opportunity to snag the publicist and see, because she told me there may be an opening for a private interview. So I just wanted to kind of push that issue. So I walked over there and I didn't want to bother Alex. You know, I was just like, I stood off to the side and I talked to the publicist. She's like, yeah, no, I'm sorry. There's just not enough time, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, after I got done talking to her and, she recognized who I was from emails and things like that. You know, Alex Garland kind of walked up and was standing next to me again. And I was kind of like nudging the fanboys behind me. And I just kind of looked over at him. I just took the opportunity to shake his hand. I said, you know, I really appreciate your work. I love what you're doing in sci-fi. And, you know, for you to tackle a subject like determinism, which really interests me and my co-hosts and a lot of our listeners, I think is just really brave and I commend you for it. And you've seen like his like shoulders pop back and his head like perk up, like, you know what I'm talking about? Like so many, I think he goes in these interviews and he talks to so many people and like this subject matter is just so over people's heads that when I mentioned, like I said, you know, when I said actual determinism and I knew the technical term for the subject matter, like he almost like popped up. I thought I was going to get an interview. You know, I thought he was going to look at the publicist and be like, squeeze this guy in, you know, but no dice. It's all good.
No, it didn't work out that way.
It's all good. You know, but you could see like his genuine interest and his genuine like passion for these sci-fi subjects, you know, which when you're creating a show like this, you kind of need, you know, if you're going to do it and do it right, you want someone like an Alex Garland that has a passion for this kind of like subject matter to be the one to do it.
Yeah. And he has clearly stated that he looks in his works that people in the scientific community or whatever else respect what he's put out, and not that it's sensational and not that it's really, you know, these high level blockbuster type things that have mass appeal. Is he wants it to be a part of a conversation and he wants it to be as accurate as possible. So he wants the field of quantum physics and quantum computing to look at this and respect how he portrays that community and how he portrays the science behind that community. Same as he was really into that with like Ex Machina and how he portrayed artificial intelligence and the actual capability of artificial intelligence at the time. He's very, very much aware of his impact on sci-fi.
Well, it was funny because when they asked him about Annihilation and like his like some of his thoughts on that movie, he had stated that he didn't consider Annihilation sci-fi. He's like, it's more about how, you know, we interact with the world and our DNA. And like, have you seen Annihilation yet?
I have not.
So it's a very interesting movie. You know, an alien lands, creates this like biodome, and everything in the biodome, like your DNA just starts like meshing. So like plants end up picking up human DNA, and plants grow in the shape of humans, and animals get merged together. And it's just like this amalgam of DNA and stuff. And he had mentioned how like he really didn't even consider that sci-fi, that it was more about like the human experience and interaction. And then he had to like rephrase that and just be like, well, I guess there's fucking aliens in it, so yeah, I guess it's sci-fi. but you can, just from like that statement, you can see that his perspective is slightly tilted off to the side than most people's are when he does these works. You know, and the fact that he's doing an 8-part miniseries and treating it like it's just an 8-hour-long film. You know, the cinematography in the show is great.
I found fascinating, especially for it to be on like TV. It's visually like just the tones and the colors and everything you see, and it's slow, and it's really letting the actors kind of act through some silence and awkward moments. It's really well done. For I love where we're at with like TV and these streaming services and everything else, that they're willing to put the time into.
This is his first television show, and they asked him, you know, like, you know, were you excited to be able to tackle this? And he said flat out, he's like, yeah, I couldn't fucking wait. He was like, you know, to not have the constraints of a 2.5-hour movie where it needs to have a beginning, middle, end, act one, act two, act three, to where you can expand your thoughts and really like dive deep into subjects. He was still aware that, you know, episodes have to end. You still need to have like somewhat cliffhangers. He's like, I had to work through that a little bit. He's like, but to be able to tell an 8-hour story, he loved it. He loved every second of it, you know.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to finishing it up. I loved the first two episodes. Knowing that he's a determinist, I'm going to predict that he's going to use the show to prove that. But
one of the things I do want to give him credit for too is that he stated in the panel, he was very hesitant to take credit for any of his work. He did go out of his way to let people know that every movie you see is a conglomeration of everybody working on that movie. He's like, is it, you know, as a director and as the creator, he's like, does it fall on me when somebody brings me a really good idea to just say, yeah, okay, let's do that? He's like, yeah. But he's like, in no way did I have anything to do with that scene. So the example he used was in Dread. You know, he I think he was a screenwriter on Dread, so he was on set for a lot of it. But there's a few articles that came out that said that he deserves a lot more of the credit for the final production of that movie and how it came out. And he was like, well, look, you know, the bathroom scene where she's sitting in the tub and she's all on the drugs, and it's just a really amazing visual scene in that movie. He's like, it was, I can't remember the woman's name, he said, but it was so-and-so. And she just had this vision of, yeah, she's this woman that loves drugs and this and that, and explained the whole concept of the scene in her head. And all it took was somebody else to go, yeah, let's do that. And they get the credit for it. She doesn't get acknowledged in any kind of credit line or anything like that on how, you know, important of a scene that was. So he went out of his way to really tell people that, you know, you can't just look at people at the credits and say, okay, well, screenplay this or cinematography that. Or he's like, every movie and every TV show you see is just this, you know, hodgepodge of ideas from really creative people, and the credit isn't distributed evenly, and you have to kind of recognize that, which for someone in his position I thought was really commendable.
Yeah, I mean, if I could ever have a conversation with Alex Garland, I would just ask him, you know, when he wins his next award as a determinist, I mean, he should really just go up there, and he shouldn't thank anybody or do anything. He should just state that this was the inevitable outcome of a bunch of series of events that led me and my team to have great success.
None of us had anything to do with this. I've just been on cruise control in life, making bomb shit. It was going to happen either way, folks. So, you know.
So, thanks for the shiny thing. As a symbol to the fact that none of you ever had a chance. But yeah, I think the show is interesting. I want more people to watch it so that way more people can be exposed to the concept of determinism and then can debate. I'll still stick in the camp of compatibilism outside of normal traditional determinism.
Yeah, no.
Otherwise, watch the show and see what kind of a miserable human being Nick Offerman is. That's what happens to you.
Talked about hiring Nick Offerman. And he said, you know, they asked, why would you hire Ron Swanson to be your main, you know, like tech guru, like Zuckerman type guy? And he said flat out that he finds that comedic actors are able to switch back and forth from comedy or cynicalness and seriousness better than some dramatic actor. So you could tell there are times where, you know, Offerman's character needs to be, you know, just kind of whimsical and just blow things off and has kind of like a lighthearted attitude towards things. But then there are times where he needs to be dead serious he said he finds that comedic actors are actually really great for that, that it's harder to get a dramatic actor to be that lighthearted, you know, kind of character and then instantly turn it off and be this like really serious character. So that's why he went with an Offerman, which is a local Chicago guy. We're big fans of Offerman.
I love Offerman, and my kids are super into the show Making It. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
I've watched every season.
My kids are a big fan of Making It, and then now watching him in this show, and I've got a new respect for his ability. So I actually just picked up the audiobook at the local library of his book that he wrote of.
Yeah, it's crazy how like much of Ron Swanson is actually Nick Offerman.
It's actually him. So that's why I'm listening to his autobiography here, but it's good, and it's narrated by him, so it's essentially 10 hours of me listening to him crack jokes.
Yeah, so that's kind of like our devs panel kind of like wrap up and thoughts. Watch this show, guys. Give it a shot. It's so well done. Even if you don't get sucked in right away, keep coming back. It's a very very complex kind of subject matter, but like we said, man, the scenes, the music, the acting, it's just such a good show.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move from the good to the bad. And and you wanted to talk about this. I think I'm done with it. I didn't join any of the conversations around this next topic, but we got more images coming from the Batman sets. And now we see the Batmobile.
Not a fan. I'm not going to really shit all over it. It looks like, you know, a decked out Firebird or IROC or something, you know, old classic muscle car, you know, kind of decked out, which leads me to believe that they're really going with this like origin of Batman story where he doesn't really know what he's doing yet. And,
yeah,
you know, he's just putting together a SWAT team bat suit and souping up some muscle car, you know, into which I mean, I'll wait till the movie comes out before I shit on it, like really shit on it. But at what point does he realize he's got more money than God? You know, like that was always Batman's MO, is that I'm rich as fuck. You know, and again, all the fanboys, are going to say, well, in Batman, you know, saga, blah, 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 he didn't do this. Yes, I know. There's like seven origins for fucking Batman. I get it. But there's the classic origin that most people know. And if they're going to make a movie that only targets the people that buy DC Comics, the fucking 15 of you assholes, like, I don't think it's going to succeed. I really don't.
This is why Batman's so ridiculous. They have to keep making movies because they make money either way. But the fact that so many people scrutinize over it, it's like, this is why Iron Man was the greatest thing to start the MCU. because nobody knew what the fuck Iron Man's backstory was. Like, people knew there was an Iron Man, but they didn't. There was no scrutiny over what they did. They had the right, the free reign to come up with a semi-original.
Well, and they stayed true to the most well-known origin, the big clunky suit. They revamped it so like it wasn't in the 60s when he did it. You know, it was like, well, why would he make a clunky suit like that in you know, whatever, 2001, 19, whatever it was when that movie came out. It was so fucking long ago. You know, but yeah, okay, well, no, he gets kidnapped and he's in this cave and he only has these pieces and like that's how he makes the original Iron Man suit. Worked out fucking perfect. Then you go into Captain America's origin, which stayed true to the fucking to the content. You know, like, it seems like, you know, they've rebooted Batman now four fucking times, you know, and each time they wanna just be edgy. You know, rather than just stick with what works. Like, I would be happy if they just, you know, when they rebooted Hulk for the MCU, they did his whole origin in a fucking montage scene in the credits. Like, they're like, you know the story. Gamma's fucking locked in a room, fucking turns green when he gets mad. Let's just start the fucking movie. Give me that. Just give me that. Parents, boom. Dead, Pearls, Alley, Batman. Let's fucking go. Let's just fucking go.
I mean, I think, yes, you could just do that. But I'm not mad at him for trying to tell a different story and to introduce all of these characters and introduce everybody kind of from ground zero. And if you're going to do that, I think it makes sense to just have a rougher Batmobile. And like, you know, it's weird when Christian Bale comes with the tumbler out of like, oh, you just got this badass thing hiding in my garage. Cool. That's my Batmobile now. It's like, no, it takes time to, R&D takes time. It takes a little, I don't care how much money you got. It takes a little bit of time to make a polished Batmobile and Batcopter and Batcycle and Bat everything else.
I mean, so then what? This whole first hour and a half is just going to be me watching Robert Pattinson in a shitty bat suit with a fucked up looking Batmobile getting his ass whooped for an hour and a half while he figures out like how, like, I'm not interested in that. Like I said, it's been rebooted so many times. I don't need another intro to fucking Batman.
But if it's more along Detective Batman and it's more along a story similar to Hush, whatever else, and it's not about the fighting and it's not about the gadgets and it's about him being the super rich, using his ingenuity to figure shit out and to actually feed the enemy with his mind. And it's not supposed to just be Ben Affleck just getting big as fuck and just going and crushing everybody.
Why did you say that name?
So it's
fucking assholes.
It's supposed to be a different direction of a Batman in general.
I get it. That's why I hope they do it right. Look, I got my fucking fingers crossed, but I'm not going to sit here and be the one to defend these choices. Quit putting it in my eyeballs. I'm not the one posting this shit. I'm not the one leaking pictures. I'm not the one, like, society is forcing this shit in my eyeballs. I cannot see it and not have an opinion. This is how it goes. So... I got a podcast. Right. We put our opinion out here. Listen to it.
Well, sometimes your opinion sucks.
Well, whatever.
All right. Let's stop talking about Batmobiles. But hey, let's talk about a movie that was supposed to come out at the end of this month. We've got the James Bond movie getting delayed. And you see, he's already on like his press circuit. He was hosting SNL this week and wasted now. As it's like, he's now promoting a movie that's not going to come out until what, November? And the new James Bond movie was supposed to come out at the end of March. Now it's been delayed due to fears of the impact that the coronavirus would have on it. And this is MGM's like one and only big movie.
The China money. That's all this is about. Is they want all the yen they could possibly make from this fucking film. And they know that if they got a couple thousand Chinese people stuffed in collapsing hospitals and nobody in China is leaving their house, that this movie is going to lose out on $400 or $500 million.
That is the truth, because here in the U.S. it's not going to have any real impact. But
yeah, no,
internationally,
our sick ass motherfuckers without health care will walk into a public place in a fucking heartbeat.
But internationally, yeah, it's there's huge losses that are expected in the entertainment industry, and like a title like James Bond has a huge international appeal. And again, it's like MGM's only movie that they're doing this year that's got any kind of mass appeal that's going to make them any kind of money. And they're trying, yeah, to probably come close to $1 billion opening.
They're mad about this. Like they're just like really pissed about this coronavirus shit. You know, it's wreaking havoc on all kinds of shit.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And you got to wonder, you know, I'm kind of surprised that Disney didn't do the same thing with Mulan. Because it's the most money they've spent on a remake, on one of their live action remakes. They spent like $255 million making Mulan. And a big part of how they're going to recoup that money is international. Like it's a
Chinese movie
folklore.
Based in China. Like, it's yeah. A movie based in China.
Like their goal was to make money in China from this movie. So I'm surprised that that's still coming out, I think, on March 20th. So, I mean, that's coming out here in a couple weeks.
Well, like, I don't know how much you want to go into this coronavirus fears, but, I mean, are they really justified even? Like, are we not jumping the gun and overreacting to a lot of this shit? Like, I understand, be aware, wash your hands. If you feel sick, stay home. But... you know, influenza A or the regular flu, whatever it's called, kills people in the five-figure numbers every fucking year.
It affects hundreds of millions of people. If we allow this to get to hundreds of millions of people, this is going to so far dwarf the death rate of the flu. That's the fear. I think it is overblown. Again, I don't know how deep we're going to go on this. I think it is overblown how much people are talking about the effects of it, but. If you don't talk about it, you don't put controls in place or whatever else, and this gets to the point where it spreads like a flu, because it has the potential to, because how long the incubation period is, how infectious it is during the incubation period, it has the potential to be extremely widespread. Like, look at the one area of China, the Wuhan district or Hubei, and how far it got spread before they went like full on lockdown, and it still got 100,000 cases over there. It has the ability to. So,
and out of 100,000, there was how many deaths?
I think they're like 3,000.
You know, and 4,000 from a lot of those statistics, it's a lot of the elderly, which we need to worry about. But if you were elderly, you worry about being sick, period. Like, period. You know, if you are elderly, you don't want to be in big crowds on a good day. Like, yeah. You know, a regular cold can turn into pneumonia in the blink of a fucking eye.
This is something that I think it deserves attention, not to the level that it's been getting, and not to like the fear mongering and mass panic that people are inciting. But if you don't want to talk about these things and you don't actually effectively quarantine and do whatever else, this has a potential to spread at a ridiculous rate.
You bring awareness, you tell people that it exists, you tell people the precautions, you know, but they just canceled, I think, like two conventions in Chicago, big conventions, yep. You know, so that's a lot, huge loss of money. It's tanking the stock market. The one thing I hope that comes out of this, you know, give a little subtext to our Fuck China segment, is that how dependent we are on Chinese manufacturing, you know, so a little virus comes out in China and shuts, you know, big sections of that country down, and it just has this trickle effect on the United States economy because we are so dependent on them for manufacturing our tech and things like that, that maybe we shouldn't have all our fucking eggs in one basket, especially in a dictatorship country, because this is what happens when a virus outbreaks. What happens if Xi just one day says, I want to fuck with the U.S. economy, we're going to tell every Chinese factory to shut down for a day, we're going to pay them their $2 for that day, every citizen for their $2 that day, because they could just print fucking money. So Xi just says, hey, National China Stay at Home Day. Fuck the Americans. Do you know what kind of effect that would have on our United States economy if every Chinese factory just shut down for one fucking day? Just one fucking day? You know?
Yeah. So
if anything comes out of these coronavirus fears, I hope it's the fact that, you know, we shouldn't be so dependent on one goddamn country for all of our goods and services.
Yeah, nothing's going to change.
yeah, we're just a bunch of fucking morons.
Nothing's going to change.
But yeah, Don't listen to me. I make no fucking sense.
Let's see what happens with this coronavirus thing. But yeah, we're definitely going to see more of an impact on these movies. But you still think, I think there's going to be no change to some of our beloved franchises, right? Like Black Widow's not going to change because that changes the entire slate of MCU. So like, yep. there's very few movies that have the ability to move around. Like I said, MGM had the ability to move James Bond because it's not like they're then moving it to compete against any one of their other big movies coming out because they don't have any big movies. Like this is it for them. So easy for them to move it.
I just
it.
Thank God they didn't cancel C2E2. Like, I mean, it was fist bump city around that place. Like, anyone, nobody shaking hands. It was all daps for all, you know, but and there was like 100,000 people there. I don't think there's been one case that people have said, you know, like, oh, well, you know, mass convention spreads virus or like, it's just...
No, I mean, it's still...
Wash like, your hands, be aware.
It's still like 300 people in this country.
Well, it's in Chicago.
300 million.
Well, yeah, it's in Chicago.
But it's not a very common thing, so...
No, we do get a couple senators self-quarantining themselves this week, which is, I don't know.
Paid vacation. All right, let's get away from diseases here. And let's real fast, a new video game has been adapted into a HBO series. I know there were several people in the Cantina community that were excited for this one, and it's The Last of Us is being adopted into an HBO series, being directed by who put together the Chernobyl show on HBO. So hopefully they do do this a bit of service here.
I mean, you kind of gotta be excited. A great video game with a great story being told by some guys that did last year's best miniseries, like on a network that really gives people free reign to explore all kinds of subjects and put out great content. Like, I don't see anything bad about this story whatsoever.
Yeah, I think it has some good potential. I don't know very much about The Last of Us as far as I've never played the game, so I don't know much of the story.
Yeah, hashtag Xbox.
Is this PlayStation exclusive? I don't know anything
about it. Yes, it is.
Aha.
It's one of those ones. It's that game that all the PlayStation, you know, people really jab in the side of Xbox fans. It's like, well, you can't play Last of Us or God of War. Go fuck your face. And it's like, well, we got Halo and a better processor.
All right. Well, so I'm curious to see when we'll get some like release dates and what they're going to put together for that show. But it's in the works. So get excited, nerds.
Yeah, be on the lookout.
All right. Well, let's run through some tech topics here and move over to the tech segment. And we'll begin with just a cool story on the first use of CRISPR-Cas9, so genome editing, being used in a human eye this last week.
Yeah. I don't know, man. This shit scares the fuck out of me. Like, all this shit scares the fuck out of me. So, of course, you know, for those that don't know, CRISPR is a gene editing machine so that, you know, you could put DNA in, you can take out certain aspects, change certain aspects. You take, you know, theoretically, you could take brown eyes and turn them into blue. You can edit it, basically, yeah, edit your own DNA. Of course, they're going to release the feel-good stories of helping people and doing some really cool, like, feel-good things before they release the story of mutant dogs and things that are going to come from this that scare the fuck out of me.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Cas9, it's such a accessible, easy technology, a way of
yeah, they make it seem like
genes.
It's like a 3D printer that anybody at home could use.
So there are home kits that you can buy to do genome editing, do Cas9. It does take some, you need some education in bioengineering or some kind of biology, but there's the technology or the implementation of it's pretty straightforward. In these instances, these are all where they're not affecting or editing the actual like germ cells. So nothing that they're doing is actually passable to say if the person who had this reproduced the genetic issue that's causing the eye problem, the genetic blindness would still be inherited to the children. So they're not doing anything that's like affecting like the human race. It's just this person.
Yet.
there is a way to affect at the germ cell level to do gene editing that is going to have inherited traits that could get passed down. There was a scientist in China who did it illegally, in jail.
Of course.
In jail in China, but who did it illegally on some twins in the embryo stage and essentially edited their genes to where they would be resistant to HIV as a test. But so there are ways to make genetic traits actually inheritable and do this at the germ level.
Like I said, they're gonna do that stuff first. You know what I mean? Because everyone's going to be like, well, why shouldn't we make babies immune to HIV? That sounds like a great idea. Okay, yeah, like I understand that thought process. But when we also start, you know, editing babies to be super soldiers and all kinds of other crazy things, like, you know, webbed toes so they can swim faster. And like, who knows where we're going to go with this shit? Like, it is very fucking scary to think about the possibilities. You know, like for me, when it comes to like this type of science, glass is always going to be half empty. It's always going to be fucking half empty for me.
Yeah, I think so too. I think there's greater potential harm to be done here than good. But there is some tangible goods that can be done, especially when you look at like genetic diseases, like in the case of them injecting into this patient's eye over in at the Oregon Health and Science University. This person has a genetic condition that was causing blindness. If you can correct that genome, theoretically, they can have their vision back in the next couple months. It says it's going to take about 2 weeks to 4 weeks to see any sign whether it's actually worked. And then, you know, maybe this person restores some level of vision in the next couple months. That's pretty cool. Like, there's some good use for that. Same thing like muscle dystrophy and dementia, some other genetic trait issues. You can cure a lot of it potentially by correcting the genes that are causing those diseases. So that's the good. But then there's like biohackers that you can find on YouTube who are injecting themselves with CRISPR to try to make their muscles bigger. And it's not working, but there's still idiots injecting themselves with at-home kits of CRISPR. So that's going to be the start of the zombie apocalypse. It's some dude trying to get big calves.
Some dude wants Brazilian big butt syndrome and I don't know where this leads. You know, it scares the fuck out of me, because for every good use that we figure out for it, there's going to be a dozen just horrific instances where people are just doing some fucking Dr. Zhivago shit, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's always, this is one that has, I think, some really, really bad ethical considerations. You know, there's all kinds of technologies. Every technology has its own ethics that you have to worry about. This one's a bit scarier than most. This one has the potential to really go off the rails, and whatever you think we're doing here,
it's China. China's already, you know, doing dastardly things with it. You know, they prosecuted the one guy, but maybe that's only because it got known to the world. Who knows? I was
gonna say, because he did it and then talked about it in a conference.
Yeah,
that's why he gets arrested.
You don't talk about CRISPR Club. Like that's one of that's the first rule of CRISPR Club. Yeah, I do believe that there are secret labs in underground mountains that they're doing some really weird shit. And when a six-legged leopard hyena gets released to the fucking world by accident, man.
All right, well, it's still in the biological kind of advancements in technology. Just a quick little story too, is Penn State, more academia, advancing some bioengineering. They've got a new system of bioprinting, which uses like some small suction in order to like actually move biological cells and kind of stack them on top of each other. So that way they can build physiological actual structures, kind of stacking these cells on top of each other, both inside like scaffolding, inside like gel that allows them to hold shape better, or without it, which is brand new. The biological printing was really tough to keep the structure and form. And now this new technology where they're using small suction is a big help. Combine that with some of the other like biological printing that they've been doing, like sending biological printers out to space to do it in low gravity, which allows the actual structures when you bioprint an ear or whatever type of organ.
I've seen how that movie ends too, motherfuckers. I've seen how that
when they don't collapse because of low G. Yeah, so combine this updated technology with more accurate kind of stacking and moving of particles with maybe low G and some space printing.
I don't know how many people seen Ad Astra, but that's there's a scene in Ad Astra that pretty much tells me how that's going to fucking end.
So this is another cool technology. Biologist, it's your time to shine. Do some CRISPR, do some bioprinting, bioengineering here.
Yeah, you know, when we say cool technology too, like it's so like I don't know. I mean, there was guys in a bunker with blacked out goggles watching this big mushroom cloud going, "Wow, that was pretty cool." That didn't turn out so well for the fucking world either.
Yeah, so that's the urn theory, right? Where I don't know if you've heard the urn theory of that every bit of technology we create is like reaching your hand into a big urn and pulling out a marble. And every technology is a marble you pull out of there. And the vast majority of those marbles are benign. There's no harm to society or minimal harm to society, and they really advance us. But in that fucking urn, there's a red marble, and that causes complete destruction. Like the nuclear bomb was one of those, right?
Yeah.
using nuclear energy was a potential good. The use of it was a red marble. Like CRISPR, when you pull that thing out and you really adopt it, are you reaching into the urn and is that a red marble? Is that going to come and
I don't think there's many technologies that you can't say haven't been weaponized. I mean, even like our iPhones and so like apps and stuff are all being weaponized by corporations to market us better. And, you know, so whether you consider it militarily weaponized or corporate weaponized, it's still, you know, doing things that really aren't beneficial to society necessarily. You know, it's, I don't think there's a technology out there right now that isn't being weaponized in some way is harming society.
Yeah, but that's not the slight misuse of the technology is not what makes it overly dangerous, right? Because the impact is not really there, right? Even the nuclear bomb, that being atomic weapons, yes, had a significant negative impact, but because it was such difficult technology, it wasn't widespread. But you look at things like CRISPR and the effect on genomes. Like, let's say you were doing CRISPR on bacteria or biological weapons or whatever else, and if it becomes a technology that's easily accessible, and so it can be widespread, it can be misused. You know, you don't have local tribes being able to have atomic weapons, but you might be able to have some other technology that does. And then that's that real red marble that you pull out of the technology when it's not only dangerous, but it's also accessible. That's when we're really in trouble.
Oh yeah.
So
be scared. Right. Be scared.
let's wrap up with a last little tech topics here. We've got,
this is so fucked up.
Yeah. I guess we'll just go with the last story here and talk about, this is fun for us to talk about because we always talk about privacy issues here. And Google, there's a story that came out this week on an individual who was accused of a crime because he was riding his bike past a home that was apparently being burglarized. And Google was obliged to give his location data to the police, which put him essentially just outside the scene of the crime at the time of the crime. And he was sent essentially a letter or an email from Google saying, well, we're releasing your location data to the police who have now placed you as a suspect. Based off this data, you have 7 days to dispute whether we're going to release your location data or not.
Man, like I've said this numerous times on the show. This is what scares the fuck out of me. So, okay, he just rode by, which should be kind of easy to show that he just kind of whizzed by. Now, what happens if at the same time he's just unlucky enough to have his bike chain come loose and he actually stopped in front of that house now for 3 to 5 minutes while he tied his shoe and fixed his bike chain? And now it shows on his GPS that you stopped right in front of this house for 5 minutes while the house was being robbed. Tell us you didn't rob this house. And he's like, man, I like fucking my bike chain slipped off and da, 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 da. Like, now he's in jail. You know, you get situations with overzealous DAs, a police force that needs to find who committed the crime to make society feel at ease and to pump their crime numbers down. And you run into situations like this, you're going to have more innocent people behind bars. And it's all due to data accumulation.
Yeah, so even in the article that Google has stated that since 2017, that the amount of federal law requests for location data in and around crime scenes has increased by 1,500% in 2017.
1,500%. 1,500.
And that was in 2017, 2018, which obviously showed that in that time frame, the police realized that, okay, the power of this. And then even since then, it's increased 500% every subsequent year after that. So it's only getting done more and more as these police organizations are realizing, like, okay, hey, we can narrow down where a crime happened and around a certain time. Hey, I want location data from anybody who was in and around that area. And Google will give the information. They just have to notify us. So this article comes from an individual who actually like read his email or whatever else. Because I'm telling you what, if I can receive that email, that's a scam. Delete. I'm not replying. I'm not reading it. I'm not doing anything. There's no chance. There's no chance if the subject line on an email is from the Google team that you're being accused of a crime. It's like, nope, delete. Never. So apparently some of those are real. And this guy here was being accused that he was being looked at.
Well, I watch a lot of those documentaries, man, that Making a Murderer and a lot of these like they did a 10-part documentary on false confessions, you know, that scares the fucking bejesus out of me, you know, that like the, and you take all of this and you bundle it up into just like a perfect scenario and you're going to jail whether you did it or not. Like if they have your metadata that can kind of plausibly put you on the scene of a murder, and they may not have your DNA, but they lock you in a goddamn cell for 36 hours with no sleep, and they don't feed you, and they're using all kinds of fucking interrogation tricks, and you just fucking accidentally confess to get this fucking over with, or they convince you that you may have, like, it's... To me, this is all just really fucking scary shit, man. And I don't know why, but I always like internalize this shit and feel like one day they're going to try to pull this shit on me, you know, and I'm just like in my head all the time. I just, you don't say shit, they don't know shit. Don't say shit, don't know shit. And just shut the fuck up, get a lawyer and don't participate in any of this shit. Like it scares the fucking bejesus out of me.
Yeah, in the end, he ended up not getting convicted or even charged with the crime.
He should have never been considered a suspect. Yeah, he was riding his fucking bike.
He did have to spend probably a significant amount of money in legal fees and attorney fees in order to dispute it. And there's other examples in the article where they talk about other individuals being falsely accused by crimes, somebody actually being charged and convicted of a crime based off of Google data that was gotten through the Google whatever geofencing requests that the federal agencies requested. So this is definitely something, you know, has the potential to also give you an alibi if you're innocent, that you could probably use the same your cell phone location data or whatever else to prove that you weren't at a scene of the crime someday.
Yeah, I think there's going to be less people strapping a cell phone to a squirrel to throw off the fucking cops than there are people riding a bike.
I'm saying legitimately innocent. I'm not talking about I'm not giving people ideas how to get off of a crime.
You know, I think there's going to be less of that and more of the, you know, I was just...
But if you're going to commit a crime, keep your phone at home.
Like, it's just, man, like I said, to me, this stuff is just really scary because... You know, cops have bias. Humans have bias. So if they get a little bit of information and they think they can catch a criminal, whether you actually did it or not does not play into a lot of law enforcement's judgments on whether they should convict you. If they can prove, if they feel they have a strong enough case to prove it, then you did it, whether you did it or not. And we see all the time people being released out of jail 20 years later, people being exonerated over DNA evidence, over all kinds of evidence. This is just going to create more and more innocent suspects that just are victims of happenstance. And it like I said, it scares the shit out of me. I watched that False Confessions documentary on Netflix, and it just blew my mind how many people would be willing to say they committed a crime that they didn't commit just because of sleep deprivation and hunger. And they went into the psychology of it too. Like it's actually really common.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why people say torture doesn't work. People confess or admit to just about anything in certain circumstances. But it's definitely a privacy concern. This is something to be worried about. Should you necessarily have to defend yourself against legal action just based off of where your cell phone says you were and a crime happened to be committed there? Is it your job to prove that you're innocent just because your location data matches up with a potential threat?
Yeah, 1 minute you're tracking your marathon training run and the next minute you're fucking a suspect for a double homicide.
Yeah, so it's definitely a privacy concern that should be tracked and should be addressed. So this is why we like talking about these things here. But that ends our...
It's our hour mark. One hour right now. Boom. Pound
our
it.
Nerd news. So we're... thank you for listening here to episode 68 of the Nerd Cantina Show. Go ahead and do us a big favor and hit some subscribe buttons or auto-download buttons. Maybe a rating or review on whatever your podcasting platform of choice is. Bonus for iTunes. Yeah, but it goes a long way towards helping us. We appreciate all the support. And
we broke. We don't advertise. So all our growth is dependent on our fans that appreciate what we're doing and recommend our show and share our show with other friends and family members that they feel would be interested in what we bring to the table also. So no Facebook ads. We're not doing any Instagram ads. It is sheerly organic because we don't have the budget for that. And so every share, every like, every retweet, every subscription is greatly appreciated.
All right. And as always, join the Nerd Cantina community over at thenerdcantina.com/community. It'll take you over to the Facebook page. If there's other topics, other things going on in the tech world, entertainment world that are of interest to you, go ahead and drop them over there. We'll pull them into the show, give our thoughts, as well as the rest of the community will jump in and give their opinions over at thenerdcantina.com/community.
Yeah, it's a real fun place. I enjoy my time in the...
All right. Well, with all that said, thanks again, nerds. Talk to you next week.
See ya.